welcome to the Sprocket Podcast. This is the place where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Brandon Rhodes. And we are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally, with a global perspective, and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
We're covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles and alternative transportation, arts and culture, communication, the internet. I don't have a witty thing to say after that.
Okay, that's fine. I was actually thinking I have many witty things to say, but I need to pull up my notes so I know what they are. Swerve jeans, man. I'm excited. I'm wearing them right now.
Haven't seen you wear jeans, I don't think, ever.
It's been 4 or 5 years since I've donned a pair of jeans.
Stand up.
Well, I'm all tied into the thing right now. I'll extend my leg this direction so you can see them.
Wow. Hey, look at the different...
Note the gussets, yes.
Yes.
But Swerve is I found them on the internet when I was...
The internet?
The internet is the thing. It's a thing. It's a series of tubes that information slides into your home by. I was looking for cycling apparel. I was just... most of my old pants, and I should start probably by saying that my pants that I used to wear were the Levi's 517s. They have the stay pressed crease.
We have very fashionable listenership.
I know. Everyone will know what this means. The 517s, they're made of polyester, and they're exclusively, I think, of polyester. Maybe some nylon, but they're stretchy. They don't absorb too much water. They dry out quickly. They're everything a cyclist needs. So I've been wearing them for the past 5 years, ever since I decided that I wanted to make cycling like a big part of my lifestyle.
It starts in the pants.
It does.
Like
very
most
much
major
so.
Major life decisions.
Or pants.
Yeah. And by the way, this over here is Katie Proctor. Hello. Thank you for joining us. Thanks for being with us. Thank you for cracking open a beer or two and being willing to chat. We do appreciate it. Now that I introduced you, you're all shy and bashful.
I know. My introduction to the show is, or you could wear no pants, which... It's actually for a plug for wool tights, not for nude cycling. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
True enough. Wool tights are a good thing
for
to have.
For every other day of the year, there's wool tights.
Exactly.
I have not yet made the jump to wool tights, but
I think you should.
I assume after the Swerve jeans, I'll be looking for something. You know, once it's hard for me to get the jeans and then I'm looking for another option, then I'll probably go to wool tights in the utility kilt or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Nothing else.
That's right. That's right. I'll be cycling about shirtless in my utility kilt and screaming, you know, with my face painted blue, I suppose.
You're still a boring person in Portland.
Something like that. Yeah, exactly. So anyways, but yeah, I got the Swerve jeans. They're fantastic. I'm really excited about them. They also have, just inside here, I'll show you. This means nothing to people out on the radio unless we explain it, but there's a little reflective strip on the inside of the jeans. So if you cuff your right leg where the bicycle chain is, as people often do, there's a little bit of reflective material in there so that you have a built-in reflector so as to be seen more easily by anyone else. They're also made of Cordura, and which I think cotton apparently fails at something like 90,000 rubs or something like that. Like apparently there are places where they test clothing and they just take the clothing.
One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten.
And they're just like rubbing it over like, I don't know, something abrasive. And apparently it fails at around like 90,000 rubs or something like that. Cordura, the fabric that these jeans are made from. And I'm not being paid to shill these. I'm not being paid.
What the fuck? Where's the episode going?
I'm just really.
We've been talking about pants for 5 minutes, bro.
I'm really excited about my new pants. They're fantastic. They're useful. And they're simplifying my life.
It's great.
So.
It's great.
The Cordura material that they make these out of, I think Cordura goes into bags and that sort of thing, you know, messenger bags and other types of products. But these are made with the Cordura fiber, which apparently, even after 250,000 rubs, still doesn't fail. And that's been a big problem.
So these are your decade pants.
These are my decade pants. I'll have them on in 10 years, yeah. If the podcast is still around in 10 years, I'll be like, hey, check out my pants. They've been around for 10 years. End of story.
Great.
So anyways, you went out hiking today. You went into the gorge, Brandon.
I did. I was enjoying some delicious French toast with my wife this morning, and I get a phone call from Aaron Flores and Jacob Hunt, and they said, hey, it's raining, but we want to go see outsides. So
nice.
Yeah, I went out to the gorge, got lost on a back road trying to find trying to find an alternative approach to Latrobe Falls. Failed miserably.
Mm.
It was a road that was going down steeper and steeper, narrower and narrower, muddier and muddier. And if you know the gorge, you know to err is to die.
True enough.
So we turned around and found another way around. So it was a nice hike.
There you go.
It was great. It was pouring out rain, and it was great.
Yeah, you were saying you found like a place where the moss was abundant and growing in.
Yeah, yeah. Once you get up to the same height as Latrobe Falls itself, it's about a 400-foot hike up to that. You go back about a third of a mile into this canyon, and there's this double waterfall that is epic and loud, and you don't really see it until you turn the corner at the last minute. It was great.
It just sneaks up on you.
Yeah, and it was like a waterfall.
Well,
the canyon was, the ravine was so thick with trees that no wind can get through to wick the wet away.
Mm.
And so it wicked onto the trees. So everything was covered in moss. It was a verdant wonderland.
Mm. That's why I wear pants.
God damn it.
I don't want moss on my legs.
Right around the corner already. Just waiting with a grin.
That's fun. That's great. I went out to Teacup Lake yesterday and did some cross-country skiing. It's only the third time I've ever tried to cross-country ski and probably the first time I've actually enjoyed it. I mean, the first time I was in Vermont with my wife and her family on some vacation, and we got to the hotel we were staying at, and they had free cross-country rentals. Or I guess they're not rentals. They just let you go out and ski with their equipment. But by the time we got out the door with all the stuff on and everything, it was almost dark. I didn't know what I was doing, and so I ended up falling down a lot and cursing. And
sounds like my honeymoon.
Indeed.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, and kind of like my second time cross-country skiing, which was in Boston. And I think it was just in the park, and it was freshly fallen snow. It hadn't been packed down or anything, so you know it was tough going already. And so lots of screaming, cursing then too. This time I just made a oof sound and hit the ground. No cursing at all.
Oh, good.
Except inside my mind. But yeah, it was a lot more fun than I expected it to be. So yeah, that was fun. Well, yeah, the last big thing that I was thinking of was the Rick Emerson show ended, I guess, Friday. I just listened to the final episode today. But
how'd that go?
It was sad, man. It was heart-wrenching.
So for those who do not live in the Portland area.
Those who don't live in the Portland area or are not listeners to the Rick Emerson show, because it had a wide-ranging reach, I think. There were people in different places all over, many who had spent time in Portland but then moved away and kept listening to the show. Katie, have you heard of Rick Emerson? You know who the guy is? Okay, yeah. And see, that's the thing. Like he was a very kind of sort of niche broadcaster.
I hadn't heard of him either.
Yeah, he started on radio here in Portland about 12 years ago, I think. And
if you don't have a car, you don't really...
You don't listen to the radio as much.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unless you're a radio geek.
Yeah. Like Brock.
That's right. Yeah. I spent a lot of time listening to. Anyways, his show, I think, and I told him when I called in on the last day, I was like, you know, I learned to talk and be conversational, I think, from listening to you, who can spin an endless yarn about basically, like, you know, about nothing, about like pop culture, about like Star Wars things, or like the minutia of Star Wars things. Or like which Star Trek captain is the best captain, or that sort of thing, you know, or rock and roll. He's a big Kiss fan. Spent a lot of time talking about rock and roll culture. And
sometimes he would mash up the categories.
Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes it was, yeah, just
Gene Simmons versus which each Star Trek captain.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyways, he's a big Portland fixture. A lot of people listened to him and enjoyed his program. I was one of them. And it was actually from his show, I think, that kind of I got the inspiration, his and then folks who worked for his show. I got the inspiration to say, hey, if some people can sit down and start podcasting, which he did and some of his staff did after they left terrestrial radio.
Mm-hmm.
Why not me? So anyways, thank you, Mr. Emerson. You will be missed. And may the Rick Emerson show live on in our heads in glory forever. Even though the broadcasting has stopped. So, good times. I'll put a link up to all
of that. What a sad way to say
it. Is. I'll put a link up to his podcast. I tell you, I'll find a place where like the archive is online. And
it's a dead link now.
Well, it'll be rolling around. Mm-hmm. There'll be a place. I'm sure we can find it. So, anyways, there's that. This isn't headlines necessarily, but
Let's roll that into headlines, should we?
Shit cyclists say?
Yes.
Yeah, this is a thing that it was constructed by People for Bikes.
Nope, you got to hit the music first and then explain it.
What was that?
You got to make the noise for the headliners.
Oh, but I don't see it as a headline. This is just like, it's an internet thing.
Okay.
Which I guess the rest of our news is too, but.
You have a tweet. You have a retweet, for God's sake, as a news headline, and you're saying, all right, go.
Yeah. Okay, I'll make you happy. Here, check it out. Switching apps now. Here is our...
Such a cantankerous old bastard I am.
Yes, you are. That's okay. That's why you're lovable.
You got to reticulate all your lines. And
our headline sounder is provided by local Portland band Hurtbird at hurtbird.com. Music. Hurtbird music? Anyways, here it is.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
Pedal just as fast as we can into the morning light. Pedal just as fast as we can into the daylight. Pedal just as fast as we can into the
So you were talking, Brock, about a YouTube video?
I was talking about a YouTube video.
A newsworthy YouTube video?
Well, see, that's what I'm saying. I don't think it's newsworthy necessarily, but I think it's amusing.
So
I'll bring it up now. Here is, it's called Shit Cyclists Say, and I'll just play maybe a little bit of it now. And, ooh, there's a little pop-up thing on my iPod. I have no idea how to get around that. Okay, there we go. All set.
Your bike way.
Do you have ceramic bearings?
Can I put this on a scale? They have the best espresso here. These carbon wheels make such a difference. How much is this weigh?
How much does your bike weigh?
Do I need one of these?
These ceramic bearings roll so much faster.
Do you have this in carbon?
Is that carbon?
Is this the lightest bell you have?
Yeah, I'm just doing a recovery day today.
I'm just doing an easy day today.
Is this real leather?
What's your threshold? My coach told me not to go over zone 2 today. How many watts are we doing?
I'm not a big power guy.
I'm pretty sure my power meter's off.
I don't race crits.
There's no way this thing is right. I'm not a climber.
Not a climber.
That's not bad. 4,000 kilojoule a day.
Yeah, I'm more of a sprinter.
Yeah, I'm not a sprinter.
Is this a Strava segment?
This is shit.
Yeah, I'm not
say.
A climber at all.
Yeah, I've
pretty
been
much.
Out for a couple hours today.
Crits are so lame.
What are crits?
Racing where you go round and round and round in circles.
Yeah, Criterion, I think, is what it's short for.
Huh.
Yeah, or Criterion, depending on how you prefer to pronounce things. But anyways, that last little bit of sound there was just people hawking loogies and blowing snot from their nostrils. Which is also something that cyclists, I suppose, say if it proceeds from your mouth. I guess that counts. But anyways, this is hilarious. It was put together by People for Bikes, which is a big political organization. They do a lot of advocacy. I think I signed their thing. Their what do you call that when you sign a thing?
Petition.
And petition. Yeah, you tell a lawmaker that you want them to do a certain thing. So anyways, they're all about bikes, and they're all about getting government to recognize bicycles as a legitimate sort of political entity. So anyways, they put this together, I guess, just to celebrate, like, you know, Fred's. And it's not even, I mean, they're obviously making fun of the whole, like, you know, racing cyclist motif. But yeah, that it's hilarious. So I recommend that you check
it
out.
We need to make one for the rest of us.
Yeah, for Portland riding around not on carbon bike cyclists.
Right. I feel that was like the Portlandia segment that they did.
No, not that guy either. Yeah. I mean, like, the people I ride with, you know, it's this white bike weighs 30 pounds. This bike weighs 50 pounds. My bike weighs 100 pounds. And then bike. I put the kids on it.
That's right.
Can carry like 500,000 or whatever kilojoules.
Yeah. So, I carried a washing machine today.
right.
How many bunches of kale can you fit in that?
Exactly. And Katie, tell me, have you ever done one of those move by bike things?
Oh yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. I moved my house by bike.
Did you?
Well done.
Nice. I've always wanted to help out, but we were talking about this before we started rolling the tape, but we live a long ways out here. And I almost feel as though, like, living here in Lentz, I'm 8 miles from downtown?
About.
Which is not that far, but it's far enough to...
As the Fred flies.
It's far enough to make a cultural shift. And so, like, I always feel like I would like to participate in something like that, but I'm always so far away that by the time I hear about something, like, it's probably over.
How many people helped with the move?
Oh, gosh, probably 25.
That's awesome.
That's pretty great,
25
yeah.
25 people. There was one over the West Hills the other day. People go far.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Are they taking, like, couches and things over the West Hills as well? That's impressive.
I didn't go.
Okay.
That was really too hardcore for me, but people went.
That's great. I love it. That's the I've seen like different cargo arrangements. I think a previous guest, Ethan, was telling us about, I think he showed us the video of his back-to-back tandem that he had built, or either he or a friend. And then there was this enormous trailer that they were carrying a couch with, which was pretty great. But over the West Hills, that's a fair amount of height. And it's tricky. Did they have any sort of innovative arrangements for carrying
I wasn't there for that one. Mine was a heavily electrified move because Joel from Splendid Cycles sent down a bunch of his bikes with volunteer riders on them.
Wow. That's nice.
So he was like, you want to do a bike move with an electric bike? Here, have my electric Bullet. So
nice. An electric Bullet. And Bullet is the cargo bike.
Is a front loader, and it's aluminum, so it's the light cargo bike.
Oh, that's nice.
They're stiff and light and fast.
Okay, and these have the ones that he sent had electric assist motors. Mm-hmm. So that's fantastic.
But you can't beat a big trailer for a bike move. Yeah, I don't have a big trailer, but bike moves are all about big trailers.
So. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we have that one, Brandon, sitting behind our house. We're going to have to start getting on this. I'll have to subscribe to the shift
kidding.
List.
We are do not withhold good to those to whom it is due when it is the power of your hands to do so. It's an old Hebrew proverb.
I like that. Yeah. I like that.
And we have power to do good.
We at least
rusting in our backyard.
We have a large trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Get on the shift
made
list.
By a homeless guy.
Yeah. Is it shift2bikes.org? If you live in the Portland area, or if you don't live in the Portland area, but you want to know what the Portland area is up to, that's a good place to start looking. So, let's see. So we're almost to the headlines.
Shut up!
No, I was going to say we've got...
Well, yeah, first up...
We've got Black Butte Porter in our hands, which which is your favorite beer.
It is my favorite beer.
Yeah, that's... I'm glad you suggested it.
It's hard to be disappointed in it.
It was one of my first, I think, when I first started drinking, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it was pretty much my first after Budweiser sort of thing, and...
You had your beer epiphany on it, when I want to have real beer.
Exactly.
Good.
Exactly. And it's not a strange or unusual beer. It's not a, it's a terribly fancy beer, but by golly, it's a good beer.
It's sweet and encouraging and full and right.
Yeah.
It is. It's great. I agree.
Love it.
I totally agree.
Well,
give me a sounder. There we go.
There we go.
First up, a retweet. I've heard of those.
Quite indeed.
A retweet from Michael Anderson. The chained TriMet buses. I love this. The chained TriMet buses look like children excessively bundled up by well-meaning yet overzealous parents.
Right. And that's just, let's see. This is,
they're a little louder.
Examiner.com. It was Michael Anderson from Portland Afoot sent this along. And
we got to get him on the show again.
We do. He's a good guy. This was basically, just talking about bad weather, or the alleged bad weather. We had sub 32. It was freezing in Portland, and so snow came out of the sky. Mm-hmm. It was at that perfect dew point when everything.
In which case, we lose our minds.
We do. And the thing is, I think we probably talked about this on either the previous show or the show before. Yeah. TriMet is our local transit agency, and they are like overzealous parents. Like, they've had bad things happen in the past. I can understand,
11-year-olds pulling guns on people, things like that.
That just happened, yeah. Yeah. That was, the past couple of days?
That Yashina Vaughn, it was her little brother, pulled a gun on a guy. Yeah.
And who's this Yashina Vaughn?
It was some poor girl from East County that
was found dead
on Rocky Butte.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did not know this.
Yeah, she was like 15, and her 11-year-old brother is going to be doing time for pulling a gun on a kid. Yeah, anyway, totally derailing this, your story, man.
Yeah, it's sad news.
I didn't let you spin that yarn all the way out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm glad you told me. It's nice to have the full context for things.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, it was mostly about the quote there, but TriMet ends up chaining up their buses, whether there's snow on the ground or not. If there's a rumor that snow might be on the ground, they will put chains on the buses. So, hence, 82nd Avenue has a lot of ruts in it. And I think that might almost be exclusively why. I mean, there's heavy truck traffic and things like that too, but there are buses that run up and down that street all day with chains on when it's 33 degrees. So, so there you go.
Bring out the trains.
So there's that.
Yeah, yeah. Next up, Cycle Wild. New schedule for Portland area bicycle camping in 2012 is posted.
It is, and Cycle Wild is exciting. Katie, you were saying you obviously heard the show last week with week before with Matt Piccio from Cycle Wild. Have you done Cycle Wild trips?
I have not been on a Cycle Wild trip.
They're pretty great.
I know Matt and I know Tomas, so I keep up.
Tomas is great. Tomas is actually the guy, Tomas Quinones, I think is how you say his name. He was on the ride that I went on when I finally successfully participated in a Cycle Wild ride.
Have you done bicycle camping?
I have done bicycle camping once, and I was 7 months pregnant at the time.
So that's impressive.
It was a silly choice, but it went well.
Yes.
Let's tag that for later. Let's save that, and we want to hear that story when we
ridiculous
get to
ridiculous things done while pregnant. I'm on it.
Thank you. Yeah.
Another episode.
The Cycle Wild is scheduled. Yeah, if you do live here in Portland, Oregon, or anywhere nearby, they have one trip a month, and they're all great local bike camping options. I realize that at this point, I think I have been to each and every one that they go to now. So this time it'll just be, you know, going out to meet and schmooze with people as opposed to just going out to discover new places. But yeah, they go to Oxbow, which is where you were married.
Aye.
And where we camped out after you were married, actually.
Aye.
We were, we were three, I think, out of all the attendees that chose to
remain
behind.
A large chunk of people just went back to Kansas' old place and drank heavily.
That's true. Yeah. Well, hey, I mean...
There were two kegs.
Brandon's gone. We got a drink. Ainsworth State Park, which is out in the gorge. Milo MacIver, which is where I went to my trip, where Tomas was leading the trip. It's close to Estacada, so if you want to make a beer run, it's only a couple miles away. Silver Falls State Park, Stubb Stewart, Sunset Falls in Washington. That's one I haven't been to yet. I got to try that out. I think that's in August. I don't know if I'll be around for that. Sunset Falls. It's up.
It's the north side of Silver Star.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because you've gone up there before. Silver Star Mountain.
I go through that campground every time I go up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a long ways away. It's near Yakult, I guess, north of Battleground in Washington. Which these are all tiny towns that no one knows. Even the people who live here don't know those towns. So
I live where?
Yakult.
Inside.
It's a great name. So anyways, they've got that schedule posted. And if you want to participate, if you want to try bicycle camping, which you haven't done it yet, or if you just want to go and hang out with people that are like-minded, it's a good spot for that. So yeah, there's that.
Oh, this is cool. Listener Blaine in BC built himself a bookshelf.
Yeah. Yeah. I subscribed to his blog just because he's got some great writing up there. I don't know if I've mentioned that before, but Blaine up there in BC. He lives on Vancouver Island, I think on the north end of Vancouver Island, and he's got a lot of great writing. He's actually doing one of his New Year's resolutions, I think, was to do something exciting with his daughter every week, every month, something like that. And so he's been writing out some of those adventures that they've taken. But this one is a bookshelf project, and he said, hey, I would like to have a bookshelf. Instead of buying one, maybe I'll just make one. So he's got... exquisite photos of all the different stages of development and all the things that he had to do. And I think he's got directions on how to do that yourself. So if you'd like to build one, you've got that.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, yeah, his blog is called The Cynical Cyclist. And he's actually, I think he's written a little bit about trying to move away from the cynicism and be more, positive.
I need to take a page out of that book.
Maybe he can help us out at some point.
You all right there?
Excuse me. No, now I am. Anyways, he's got some great writing up there on his blog. So check that out.
Mm-hmm.
And then.
Oh, yeah. Can you play a more ominous noise?
That's sad. Hang on.
By way of Bike Portland, and we don't mean that noise at Bike Portland. We mean it at the city of Sherwood. That's right. They've banned bicycles. They have banned bicycles around quote unquote public places.
Thanks. I'm just indulging myself. It's exactly like the trailer for Inception.
Yeah, that's right. It was. Yep.
Okay.
Ellen Page was right there. But they then amended the law amidst the outcry.
Yeah. Yeah. So, the beginning of the story is, let's see here. And this is written by the first article was by Jonathan Moss. The second one is by Will Van Loo, I think, who is their Southwest and Washington County correspondent. But basically, the beginning of the story talked about the impending danger to bicyclists. The quote here is, city staff has identified a need to protect significant public investments in the city of Sherwood from damage resulting from improper use and to protect the city of Sherwood from liability that may arise from improper
bicycles
use.
Bicycles do cause a lot of damage to sidewalks and streets, all that weight, you know.
Yeah, yeah, they're even worse than buses with chains on them.
Yeah, studded tires, it's gnarly.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I've noticed in a lot of places, a lot of urban landscapes, if you go to a park or something that has a bench or like a long surface that that you might be able to grind a skateboard down, they've installed those little nubs. I don't know what you call them, but...
Nubbins.
Yes, little nubbins that with... they've got, you know, they're just... anchored into the surface of either the concrete or the wood on the bench or whatever. So like if you're trying to grind the skateboard and achieve sweetness, you can't. So I assume
they've fussed the sweet way.
That's right. I assume that's what when people conceived this law, I assume that's what they had in mind was you know, like recreational use and tricks and that sort of thing, and skateboarding being a crime. Which, I mean, depends on your perspective, but I choose to believe it's not. Mm-hmm. Unless, of course, I guess it's legal. But anyways, the code says here it would specifically prohibit the use of bicycles, unicycles, roller skates, roller blades, scooters, and skateboards within 30 feet of public spaces. And the new ordinance defines public spaces as any property that is owned or held by the city of Sherwood for public use, including parks and open squares. So... you get written up for a ticket just for having your bicycle in the park, I guess, or using it.
30 feet, that's riding by.
Right. And that hence the problem, hence the frustration by the public, I think, after this. There was an outcry and people said, "What? Well, I don't wanna get a ticket just for being in the city of Sherwood, you know?" And I think the park that
you
they
can't use your ride your bike in your driveway in that case.
Exactly. If you live, yeah, it's kind of like what, like there's certain rules about schools and like there are signs posted about how you're like 1,000 feet from a school. If in fact you have legal history that might prohibit that. I know there's one of those up on Killingsworth, I think, or something. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you're 30 feet from a park, they should have a sign that just says, you know, no bikes here. But, the happy news on the other end of that, on the second part of the story, was that apparently the city of Sherwood was not thinking of all kinds of bicycles when they made this ruling. They were probably thinking largely of trick bikes, apparently. But let's see here. The Captain Jim Reed spoke at the public meeting regarding this and said that the ordinance will only apply in areas where the city manager approves signage prohibiting certain activities. So that means that you're not just going to get busted like automatically for being somewhere unless there's a sign visibly posted near where you are. And the other good part of that was...
Can I be in a bike lane riding my bike, and if I can see the sign, am I still screwed?
In fact, you are not screwed, sir.
Okay.
The good news is, let's see, the mayor, Keith Mays, agrees that the wording of the ordinance was severe and says, if we turned around and enforced it to the extreme, we'd all be in a heap of trouble, unquote. The clarification that they made to the wording of the law was that nothing in this section is intended to prohibit a person from lawfully riding a bicycle, unicycle, roller skates, roller blades, scooter, or skateboard to and from a designated bike rack or storage facility. Or the same as, you know, a public right-of-way.
I trust they've designated all of those.
Exactly, yeah. I'm sure they left out tricycles, so we don't know what's going to happen if a tricycle should, in fact, appear.
Or quad cycles.
Indeed. Or wheelchairs, for
or
that
matter.
Or
hoverboards.
Well, if it's a hoverboard over water, you know that's not going to work. So, anyways... the gist of these revisions was to say that, you know, you don't have to worry if you're riding through Sherwood, you're not going to get a ticket just for being on a bicycle. And I was telling you, Brandon, before we started rolling tape about there's that city in Colorado that did, in fact, ban bicycling entirely, which is sad. But I guess they've got a casino there, and they like the roadways to be free and clear so cars can come and go. We are not that city. Neither is the city of Sherwood. So
I got all my venom out before the recording about that one. I'm going to just let it all stay out.
Oh man, you should have heard. He was pissed. He was upset.
No, I'm not. I'm not going there. Stop it.
I was just going to see if we could just elicit some of that out of you right now. But,
no,
apparently I've directed it all towards myself.
No, they all need hugs or something.
They do need hugs.
Their moms didn't hug them enough or
something. That's the thing. Yeah. You know, that reminds me. Do we have another story on the docket?
They are burning petroleum.
Yes, they are.
Shoot them!
Oh, we do have one more here. Maybe I'll say this right now, just to make sure I'm clear. And I suppose this is probably not the point in the program at which anyone who maybe was offended by the statement would hear it. But I mentioned about how the people at City Bikes, apparently I made this broad sweeping statement. And it's not like anybody's
on
complained
this
yet. Last week, I think when Fat Boy was here, we were talking about city bikes and fixing bikes, and I said, yeah, city bikes, they're all dumb, which is not necessarily, I mean, that's not true.
No, they're great.
They're great people, and I'm really glad they're there. They did all of my bike work for like the first 2 or 3 years, I think, just because they were cooperatively owned. They know what they're doing. They know their shit. They're good, good bike mechanics. My feelings of being, you know, being the misfit are often, I think, I often redirect those at the people I'm feeling that from, whether it's their fault
or
not.
I'm the victim here.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyways, that's kind of like my humorous generalization that I think could be taken out of context. So,
cheers to Clever Cycles.
Cheers to Clever Cycles. Also to City Bikes.
Shit. Sorry. What did I say? Everybody.
Cheers to Clever Cycles.
Clever Cycles are also lovely.
Thank you.
They are. I've never felt I've never felt the pressure, the social pressure that I felt at City Bikes. I've never felt that at Clever Cycles, but I haven't spent as much time there either. I think it could be an across the board sort of thing where you go to a bike shop, eventually you're going to feel like, you know, like somebody knows more than you do. And I guess what I do with that is my own problem. So anyways, I just want to make sure I clarify that. Now, I love City Bikes. I'm really glad they're there. I'm really glad they're doing what they're doing. So, just in case, and maybe I'm now making a bigger deal out of it than it could have been, but, just wanted to make sure everybody knows I try my best to be a loving and accepting person.
God and man forgives all you. Right. Go now in peace.
Thank you. Now I can raise my beer. All right. That being said, moving on.
Oh,
soup cycle. Oh, I guess that's your job, huh?
Yes. No, you already said it. Soup Cycle, hey, this is a big deal. They reached their 50,000th delivery.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. And Soup Cycle
of soup.
Mm-hmm. We've had them on the show before.
Deceived.
Or Jed Lazar from I'm trying to remember where he said he was from. Anyways, he's in Portland now, and he's been here for long enough to deliver 50,000 soups, I guess. What the article said, he's delivered about 15,000 of those himself. The rest are delivered by his staff of bicycle riding soup deliverers. There's some
his
great
soup
photos.
Nazis.
Soup Nazis, indeed. There are some great photos in the article here about his setup and the way it looks. I love this one because it's got the whole blurred motion focus effect. And you get Jed
action
on the bicycle,
shot.
all crisp and clear, and then everything in the background is all blurry. But, anyways, yeah, it's good news. It's nice to see that someone can start a small business and do something inventive, and it works
and build it out of a class assignment, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When he first started, it was just like come up with a business proposal for class, kind of in the abstract. But he did this, and somebody else said, "Hey, let's start this thing up and see if it actually works in the real world." And so they did, and it does apparently. I also like the shirt that he's wearing in this photo that says, "I'd rather be spooning soup."
Oh, I get.
So, yeah, I think that's probably. There's a lot of details in the article if you'd
it's
like to
article.
Read it. I don't think there's anything else in here that necessarily needs to be read. Here. Lazar acknowledges that one of the purposes of Soup Cycle is to promote a green lifestyle. And the more people hear about his success, the more he's fulfilling that mission. I did see him on some magazine somewhere. It was in like New Seasons or something like that. But he was on the cover. So people are hearing about it, which is good. Congratulations. We applaud. I really do need like applause as a sound effect.
Mm-hmm. Like we're recorded before a live studio audience.
Exactly, yeah. With a laugh track.
This Rocket Podcast is recorded before a live studio audience.
Okay, well, hey, congratulations, Soup Cycle. That's the end of our news segment. We should probably close that out.
You're taking a lot of responsibility in owning and riding a bicycle. You are now an operator of a wheeled vehicle.
I can find one.
Okay, good.
Why don't you explain the nature of the fanfare?
It matters to me.
Oh, yeah, well, it does. It's important.
I like it. It's one of my favorite parts of every episode.
Please do explain to Katie what her choices
All
are.
All right. Your choices are, for your introduction, the most simple would be a gong, and then we've also got a classic movie and Royal.
Movie, definitely.
Classic movie.
Oh, okay, definitely. There we go. I think, is that the same one that Fat Boy chose last week?
I think so.
This
it's
is
great.
A popular,
I love it.
Popular fanfare this this time of year. Here it comes. We give to you Katie Proctor of Portland's Critical Mass. Hello. Thank you for joining us.
Happy to be here.
So, first of all, you're the person that it kind of coordinates all of these events, right?
Right.
So you're the big cheese in charge. You're the one.
Yes,
yeah,
very much.
Yeah. Before we talk about that, maybe you could tell us just about how you arrived in Portland. Are you from here or did you travel here from somewhere else?
Well, I was born in Eugene and I grew up in Central California. Don't tell anyone. And
we won't. Your secret is safe here on the radio.
And then I went to college in Eugene. And then I was back east for 5 years, and then I moved to Portland.
Okay. What's back east? Is that...
Ithaca, New York.
Ithaca. Okay, nice. I've heard of the city. I've never heard anything
else about
it. I affirm
that it exists.
It's centrally isolated.
Is that right? Just kind of tucked away somewhere.
Yeah. It's about 7 hours to anywhere.
Okay, yeah. And now you're back here.
So yes.
Brandon spent a lot of time in Eugene for school.
Yes. UVO?
Oh, yeah.
Quack, quack.
There we go. I love my ducks.
Yeah, I guess. We got a Rose Bowl finally. So.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay.
I didn't do it. I was over. I was at Tyson's place at the time.
There we go. How long have you, Katie, been a bikey person? Like, did you kind of grow up with a bikey culture, or did you develop that somewhere along the way?
There were bikes in my childhood up until I turned 16 and got a car, or could drive my parents' minivan. And then I went to college and had no car. And so my life in Eugene was car-free.
It's a good place for it, really.
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah. I think it's better than here, honestly.
I agree.
It's fantastic. It's a great place to not have a car.
Certainly.
And then we went to Ithaca, and Ithaca is cold and steep and not very car-friendly. And then we moved to the country outside a small town outside of the small city that is Ithaca.
Okay.
And got a car. And so we had a half hour commute for 5 years, and that got old real quick. And we came to Portland and we sold our car within a month and have been carless for 2.5 years now.
Yeah.
Well done.
Did you come to Portland with the intention of becoming carless or car free, or
that was definitely part of the plan?
Okay, I was wondering. The other option, I guess, is that you arrived here and then like that kind of happened by accident, or like
you're so bowled over by the bicycles.
it
can happen, especially I guess like you were saying, you live kind of close in. I think the neighborhood where you live, I could imagine being bowled over by bicycles very easily. So, yeah. tell us about the critical mass idea at large.
So the critical mass idea at large grew out of Shane McRhodes, who's in Eugene, he runs the Safe Routes to School program there, and he had the fellow who coined the term critical mass coming over, and they wanted to have an event in his honor, and they had all these children running about and didn't feel like a critical mass proper was the thing to do because there were all these kids and it didn't feel like a kid event.
Sure.
So his line is that the bike movement has grown up and now it has kids. So they got together, scoots and tricycles and all the kids on all of their bicycle machines, and they went for a ride together. And really it's about talking about making the streets safer for kids and families.
Mm-hmm.
And that I feel like there's a lot of snideness thrown around about critical mass, but I feel like the thing that gets missed about critical mass is that, especially here in Portland, it worked.
No kidding.
It really did a lot of what it set out to do in terms of rallying bikes as a political force and making the city take them very seriously and making the city a better place to ride a bicycle. And that's true, really, if you are male and under 45 and have no serious physical impairments and are confident on a bicycle.
So our current bike status is sort of like the original constitution.
It works. Yes.
White male landowners.
Exactly. Exactly. And bam. And that's great. And I'm thrilled that we have gotten that far. And I think that, you know, the rest of the country could do well to be at that point. But I think there's a lot still to be done for making riding a bicycle appealing to a lot more people, and people who are young or disabled or have a family to transport. And so that's a big part of what Critical Mass is about.
Right, right. And Critical Mass, I've never actually participated in one. To my shame and all. But have you, Brandon?
Oh, yeah. I've gotten a ticket for it.
Tell me about this.
It wasn't that good.
In brief, I mean, you were...
Oh, well, we were... it was in Eugene in 2005, and we were going on through here and there, and there was no clear person who had designated the route that time. It was like July of 2005.
Okay.
And we met our way through the downtown of Eugene, and was like, where are we going to go next? This way, that way. And it was just whatever jackass was in front saying it. And then we went down Franklin Boulevard past where the now courthouse is. And went down there and turned right on Patterson, is it? Yeah. And took that down to like 18th. And the cops were waiting for us there. Ah. And I had made it. What you do if you don't want to get caught by cops is be at the front or the back. You'd be in the middle. You can get out a little easier and not. They really just pick off people at the front.
Sure.
And I was like the second person in front because everybody else who was willing to make a call on things had like dissolved back into the crowd, and I was like, well, we've got to just get... I was just trying to get us back to the park because I didn't want to be being a jerk on Franklin because those are the kind of people who will not genuinely consider your opinion.
Yeah, and Franklin...
So I got a ticket turning right on a red without stopping completely.
Oh, okay. It's a California stop then.
Yeah.
Basically. Okay, yeah. And Katie, have you... you've done regular Critical Mass as well?
You know, I didn't. I think I missed it. I'm too young.
That's all right.
Pretty much done by the time I came along.
And that's, yeah, I think that's my situation here in Portland. And that what you were saying is that Portland doesn't have one, I think. It's basically like we found kind of what we wanted for, at least for, like you say, the approximately appropriately aged white male who is in perfect physical shape, has perfect safety on the road. So Critical Mass is about kind of trying to level that field for everybody else.
Yeah, and I think it's also about creating a sort of normalcy around biking for the kids.
Uh-huh.
Because my kids get around mostly by foot and by bike. And I think it's really valuable for them to see other kids who are in similar situations.
For sure.
Because certainly among their sort of neighborhood peers, they're kind of weird.
And that's funny that even here in Portland, it can be weird for you to be a bikey person,
yeah.
I guess, or for it to be a bikey family.
So I think that on the one hand, it would be nice to be creating the next generation of activists. On the other hand, it would be really nice to be creating the next generation of normal. Right,
right, right. Not that they have to be activists. Like when they grow up, like maybe by the time they get there, it'll just be a thing.
So how do you make it culturally safe for kids? How do you make it cool for kids?
I don't know. My like, kid is two. Everything right. is cool.
Well, yeah, yeah. Fucking A. Yeah, the whole world is cool.
It would be. I guess. I mean. Yeah. Culture change is tricky, but I suppose like if you're at the point where your kids are still young. You find yourself in a position to kind of create that? Do you have some ideas about how that might work?
Well, I mean, I think that we were talking about shift earlier, and I think that the idea of bike fun adds the new bike activism, that we don't need to go out in the streets and yell at people. What we need to do is very visibly be having a really good time. And that is actually the way to convince people that what we're doing is a good idea.
Yeah.
Does the naked bike ride count as that?
Absolutely. and so that's really what Critical Mass is trying to do, is be bike fun for, you know, people who would rather go roller skating than go to a bar.
Mm-hmm.
So... Not that grown-ups can't go roller skating.
But. Oh, sure. And not that kids can't go to bar. No, I'm just kidding. Some states
the old switcheroo. Right.
But no, there's a lot of people who, even if they wanted to go to the bar, they're legally kind of kept out of it. And there are lots of more age-appropriate activities, I suppose, for children than going to the bar. So
pulling guns on people in the max.
Right, right. I mean, those are two options that you don't want your kids into. I guess... Finding out how to promote that's fantastic. So what is a typical Critical Mass ride look like?
So it's usually 3 or 4 miles, and usually a loop, but not always. And we start in a park somewhere, and end up somewhere fun. And if it's wintertime, there's usually a hot chocolate in the middle.
There we go.
Because it's cold.
Yeah.
Last month, so last weekend, actually, we went on a ride to Oaks Bottom and went roller skating.
That's awesome.
We've gone to puppet shows. We've gone... Our first one, a year ago, October, we went to the Thrill the World dance downtown, where like 100 people got together and did the Thriller dance all together.
That's pretty awesome.
In zombie clothes. And then and then got to watch the zombie walk. So that was really entertaining.
So it's bicycle kids to cool, fun Portland things.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is.
That's awesome.
And I think our most ambitious one so far is that we threw our own square dance. We hired a children's musician by the name of Professor Banjo, who's also a square dance caller, and he brought a couple of his buddies, and that's we had awesome. A square dance in a Portland backyard complete with chickens and bales of straw, and I mean, you know.
That is fantastic. That's beautiful. And what is it, Dr. Banjo or Mr. Banjo?
Professor Banjo.
Professor, oh, excuse me. Okay, there we go. That sounds like a lot of fun.
PR Banjo.
Do kids know anything about square dancing these days? Like, did he have to start from the ground up?
Professor Banjo has the amazing niche of being a children's square dance caller.
Uh-huh.
So there's lots of waving your arms around and pretending to be various animals in his square dance calling.
That sounds easier.
He's got you covered.
Yeah, that sounds easier than what I assume square dancing is.
He's the Rafi of Kansas.
Do-si-do and pretend to be a chicken, sort of like that.
There you go. Nice. I remember the only time I've ever square danced was I think I was doing a summer camp with some kids, and the guy running the camp well intentionedly said, "Hey, you know it'd be fun? We'll take the kids square dancing." Which, I mean, I think he was intending it kind of like in a quasi ironic way, but most of the kids were not into it.
No.
And most of the kids ended up outside the hall, like I don't know, tossing rocks into the pond and stuff. So
it's the only way you can easily get me to dance square dance my brains out. Yeah, it's nice.
You do own a straw hat.
I have to say there was some excellent solidarity too among the kids who wouldn't dance. They were all sort of pooled together in sulky clumps, not dancing, which I think has its own value.
You're getting started early. It's kind of like the Breakfast Club. You can see it like forming at that stage, mm-hmm. even when they're young.
But there's camaraderie in not participating.
Say more about teaching the kids how to do biking together in a group. Do they tend to almost run into each other? Do you have to give some very clear outlines of, like, thou shalt not?
So what I give at the start, everyone has to have their grown-ups with them. And it is very much about this sort of personal responsibility ethic of you are watching your own children and any other children who come across your path. And what I say for participation in the ride is that you need to be able to ride on the right side of the road, stop at stop signs, and follow verbal instructions. And we take everything else from there. We usually ride in a sort of perimeter, so there are grown-ups to the outside and kids to the middle in a circling your wagon sort of formation. And there's always the 9 or 10-year-old kid who wants to be in front of the leader.
I'm a grown-up.
and so that reining them back is tricky.
Do you have a lasso?
I need a lasso of justice. Yes.
Too much fun.
With her lasso of justice and her cape of, okay.
Responsibility.
Yes, yes.
Justice and responsibility.
Yeah, they crash into each other sometimes.
Yeah.
It happens.
It happens to adults too. It's fine.
It's true. It's true. Group rides are always a little tricky. There's always probably about half the kids on any given ride are cargo, are on in a Bockfietz or in a trailer.
Yeah,
or
sure.
Something like that. And the remaining kids. Last time there was one really sweet kid. I think he couldn't have been more than 3 on his scoot. So no pedals.
Oh,
just
yeah,
feet on the ground, balance bike sort of deal. And he got 6 or 7 blocks before he had to get up onto his mom's exercise and get carried. He was a really good sport about it, but you just sort of saw the clump getting stretched farther and farther out as he was moving more and more slowly.
And he's kind of like the duckling, just like running along behind, like, "Mommy, wait for me."
And we've certainly had rides where there are enough of those that we just go that fast, and there aren't a whole lot of 7 or 8-year-olds, so you definitely play it by ear.
Yeah.
There's people in town who are much better at bicycling education than me. The Community Cycling Center has this great program that they do every summer for the sort of 7-8-year-old competent but not street safe rider.
Yeah, and that's it's like a summer camp basically, or like a day camp. Like, you know, they come out and they learn how to ride the bikes for most of the day, and then they go home and then they come back and do it the next day.
And Safe Routes to Schools also does this sort of street training for kids. I have a huge amount of respect for those folks, but I am not trained in doing that. And so we play it much more by ear on the Kidical Mass Ride.
Sure, yeah. Well, I'd imagine you probably have an intuitive sense of safety, like as a parent. That I assume your radar is just kind of automatically tuned to that. Like
definitely.
It's something that you kind of do automatically. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had any close calls?
Not on a Kidical Mass Ride. I was on a bike fun ride with a bunch of kids a while back, and a car shot an intersection that was full of people, and it was very scary. There were corkers, and there were kids in the intersection, and somebody lost their patience, and they just gunned it through.
And for anybody who hasn't done a group ride, a corker is someone who basically just stands at the intersection and stops the traffic.
And cheerfully stops traffic as the ride goes through. And it is... it's actually something that the Portland police weighed in a lot about during the critical mass time.
Right.
And that they prefer that to stop and go of a big group ride, because then the ride gets more stretched out.
That's really interesting.
So it's not legal, but it is preferred.
Funny how that works out, huh?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like most of my pastimes.
So that was the scariest, but not on a critical mass ride. We've had very good luck, I think.
That's good. That's good. I suppose you probably also see an interesting fleet of bikes. You mentioned like Bachfeets and Bullets and that sort of thing. Like you've got a fair amount of variety in the fleet or in the group of people that show up. What is normal, do you think?
Oh gosh.
Or is there a normal?
I don't think there is a normal. I mean, I ride a ridiculous Frankenbike. I ride a home hacked Yuba Mundo with these massive boxes on the back that are plywood and hold a car seat because my youngest is 6 months old.
And the Mundo is basically like an extra cycle or something already?
It's like an extra cycle. It's a long tail.
It's a long tailed bike frame built for cargo carrying.
For like 500 pounds. It's an incredibly sturdy.
For the exceptionally obese baby.
Exactly. Incredibly sturdy bicycle. But people come out in all of the bikes.
Yeah.
And it's great. And I think that collaboration and brainstorming is really helpful for the parents as well. If you've got your kid in a trailer and they hate it, you get this opportunity to test ride everybody else's bike.
Sure.
Which is great.
Yeah. Like if you find out that the trailer is a real drag, or the kid just doesn't want to do it, maybe there's another option.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or if your kid is about to outgrow whatever you have them in, you can find the parent with the kid who's a year older than your kid and see what they're doing.
You're about to graduate up to the next level.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So you have the Mundo now, and you said it's home hacked. You've done some modifications.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Tell us a little bit more about the, because you said it's a car seat and a young baby who's not yet available for more options, like. Needs to be secured, head needs to be braced, that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. So she had her first ride in that sucker at 3 weeks old.
That's awesome.
Which my son had to wait till 7 weeks because it took the 7 weeks of bonding leave for my husband to build the thing.
Okay.
But we had to get to Trek in the Park, man. And so 3 weeks it was.
Trek in the Park, one of the best things about
Portland. We're not taking
a trip right
there. What's that,
huh? Nothing. And... Yeah, so we have these big marine plywood cargo boxes. They look like the biggest panniers ever.
Nice.
And they're wide enough to fit a car seat in them, and the car seat sits on a little bit of padding sort of for suspension.
Okay.
And then it's strapped in really securely.
Yeah.
And it's a standard car seat, and then when they're really tiny, you use the extra little baby padding head securement bits.
Yeah.
And do you guys have kids? Have you done this?
Not yet, no. We've got a lot of friends who are having kids, and they're in process, I think. But I don't think I've ever seen the baby attachment, I guess.
and it's really good. The real struggle there, I don't know. Do cops listen to your show? So the real struggle we have with the under 9 months crowd is that for children under 16 in Portland, Oregon, helmets are mandatory.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And if you are not old enough to sit upright, but rather have your head supported because you're lying down like a baby in a car seat is, there's no way to have a helmet on safely because a helmet props your head up.
Okay.
It bends your neck at an unfortunate angle, and it's not safe.
Right.
It spoils the safety of the car seat.
Okay.
Which means that there's a de facto ban on having anyone under 10, 11 months.
Right.
In a, on a bicycle at all.
So someone you know, not you, but someone you know might have done something like this.
But, well, until one or so, if you have them in a car, I mean, they're still strapped to a big hunk of styrofoam. It's
sure.
just underneath rather than over the top of them. It's, but yeah, it's effectively illegal.
Right. Yeah. And that's an interesting thing. I guess, I mean, yeah. Brandon?
Why no trailer? I feel like that's a bit safer.
I feel like a trailer puts them farther away, and it puts them behind a heavy piece of plastic so that it's harder to hear them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take the plastic off, then they get street grit in their face, which
is not the tires spit and everything in
exactly. And I also, back when I used a trailer for my laundry, I flipped on once, and I would rather not do that with something other than laundry in my trailer.
How did the trailer flip come about?
Tight corner, slick street.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah,
and you can just kind of picture that happening in your head, like not with laundry in the trailer, but with like a child.
Exactly. I mean, laundry is one thing, but, so I like having them on the same wheels as me. I also, so I've done trailering, and the other stressor for me is that I like to choose a line that's not very bumpy. Especially when they're really small, because you don't want to hit potholes and bump their heads. But if their wheels are not on the same line as your wheels,
and it's much harder to predict.
It's much harder to know where their wheels are going to go.
Yep.
So it's hard to choose a good line for them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
a more subtle decision than what feels the most safe.
Yeah.
There's more to it than that. It's not to say it's like a radical disparity by any stretch.
No, I mean, I think trailers are great. Because they have a low barrier to entry, they're relatively cheap, especially if you get them used. You can put a car seat in them, and it's easy. Mm-hmm. And if you're doing weekend rides because you really want to get out on your bike because you haven't been out on your bike for 5 months and you just need to go and you have this baby, I think it's a great way to go. But for daily transportation, I don't think they're ideal.
Huh. Okay, cool.
It's good to have the perspective. I think safety is obviously one of the most important things that you can consider when you're on the road. And, I mean, some people would say that you're taking unnecessary precautions, that you don't have to go to all that trouble, the chances are so low that something could happen. But if something does happen, you want to be prepared for it, and you want to have the best equipment you possibly can, I'm sure. So,
well, yeah. And I feel like one of the hardest things about being a parent on a bicycle is learning not to be scared all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not about, that's not even about what's safe and what's not.
Right.
It's about if you get around by a car all the time, everyone else does too. And so that danger is invisible. You don't think about,
sure,
this is the way that most children in this country die.
Cars aren't the safest thing in the world.
No, they're not. They're incredibly dangerous. They are the leading cause of
preventable death.
Of preventable death death for anyone under whatever it is, 25, 30.
Yeah, yeah. Outside of smoking
children
and cancer.
Die in cars. It's awful. Mm-hmm. And my bicycle is no more dangerous than that.
Yep.
Whether it's less dangerous than that is subject to statistics, but it's no more dangerous than that.
So stepping away from, I guess, the danger issue, like as you think of what are obstacles that parents of younger kids may be experiencing to a completely car-free life? Like, is it there are certain products that just need to be crafted and made affordable? Is it infrastructure? Is it a culture issue?
All of those things.
Yeah.
All of those things.
What gets you pissed?
I wish there were more options for babies on bicycles, which we already mentioned.
Just that in terms of accessories.
There's no standard product. And there's no understood best method. But I think one of the other real barriers is that a lot of women are told to stop biking relatively early in pregnancy, which means that even if they ride their bike every day, most women, by the time they're 3 or 4 months along, their doctors are saying, yeah, you really should give that up, which means that they haven't ridden a bike for as much as 6-8 months beforehand. Mm-hmm. Then they have this new baby who is completely overwhelming, and they're told that they can't put the baby on the bike for at least another year. Then it's been 2 years.
They've probably completely recalibrated to a petrol-powered.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And there's just this sense of being nervous about being on a bike, which is horrendous. I mean, hugely compounded by having this precious being that you are fully responsible for with you. I am really sympathetic to how difficult it is for young mothers to do anything other than put their kid in a car seat and drive around. There's also parts of the city are easier and parts of the city are harder to be in with no car.
Yep.
And there's all the other parents and your grandparent and the grandparents and the family. And
that's a lot of peer pressure.
Lots of opinions that say, why don't you just do the normal thing?
Petrol powered peer pressure.
Isn't that safer?
Wow.
It's a huge amount of guilt. It's overwhelming. It really is.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't think I've sufficiently appreciated that.
Yeah, I would imagine it's probably not something that you really can until you're in that position. Have you come up with any ideas on how to kind of react against the peer pressure and how to strike out boldly on your own?
I mean, I think one of the best lines of thought I have is thinking about the alternatives, which is that if you live a life where you are in a car all the time and you teach your child that the only way to go anywhere at all is to get into the car and go somewhere, you are teaching them a set of habits that are themselves incredibly dangerous to their health.
Mm-hmm.
And so if what you are trying to do is create the safest life for your child, then teaching them to get in a car every day is not the way to do it.
Right.
And so
you're teaching them daily exercise. Yeah. You're teaching them awareness of their surroundings much more.
Right. And connection with the community and the neighbors and every single neighborhood cat. My goodness.
Yeah, no kidding.
And I think that those things are really important as well. And it can shrink your radius of sort of everyday movement.
Which is a good thing.
We've got about a 5-mile circle. That's where we go.
Yep.
And outside of that, we need a bus or a zip car. It's kind of a lot of trouble to get there, and that's okay. And I don't know how it's going to go as my kids get older. Mm-hmm. If they want to play sports, if they want to do dance class that only exists on the other side of town, and we'll see. And that may be about parenting decisions, and that may be about finding alternatives, and that may be about, you know, finding more regular access to a car. But for right now, I feel like the parenting choices are ones I feel really good about. The other thing, on the side of products and just regular confidence, I feel like going into the family bike shops in town, we have 3, we are incredibly lucky. You can go into Clever Cycles or Splendid Cycles or Joe Bike and talk to somebody there about how to get your kid around on a bicycle, and they have answers for you.
Those are good options.
And that's amazing. They're all knowledgeable people. They all have, not necessarily for your infant, but for anybody over a year, off-the-rack solutions for getting around by bicycle. I know parents with 2 or 3 children. I actually know a mom with 6 kids. Who gets around almost entirely by bicycle.
That's
She's
fantastic.
Amazing.
That's really cool.
She's got a Bockfietz and she puts like 3 in front and then 1 on a rack on the back and then 1 on a trailer bike. It's incredibly cool.
I'd like to see that someday. That's pretty great. Nice.
There's here in particular, we have this wealth of resources that makes it a lot easier.
Man, we're spoiled as heck.
We really are. Well, I'm glad you came in. Thank you so much for telling us about all of this amazing life that you have that could belong to anybody.
Yeah.
If people wanted to get in touch with you, you've got a website. It's what? Keticalmasspdx.org.
That's right. Okay. That's right.
And it's what, Kiticle, because we were having a hard time pulling it up on the iPhone.
I put a dot. Kiticlemass.pdx. PDX. There's oh, no PDX. Oh, gotcha. It's just critical mass.
Okay.
PDX. Critical mass PDX. Yeah.
1B, 1C.
Yep, that's right.
Okay. And we'll have a link on our website as well, so you can find that. But that's it.
Awesome.
Yeah. So thank you so much. We should roll into our
that's you.
Yeah, that's true. I'm pointing at you like you have the
sound.
I've
done it for the first 50 episodes.
Yeah, the old habits are hard to break. Hey, look over there.
Huh? You've got mail.
All right. Oh. first from Patrick in Davis. He says, as I was watching the Heat versus Bulls play today on TV, the commentators mentioned that due to the Miami Marathon, LeBron biked to work and that he sponsors a biking charity. They showed his bike embossed with his nickname, King James. Kind of cool. I remember back in the era of Neon Deion that Deion Sanders would bike two games when he played for the Reds. Wonder how many other athletes bike to work. Have a good show. Thanks, Patrick. Carl in California found this couple that he's been following for quite a while. He says they are Raw, Vegan, Evangelist Freely Love, and Harley Johnstone. Raw Fit Bitch is her site, and Durian Rider is his. They live in Australia where they follow their passion of raw vegan eating, cycling, and running.
I appreciate the subtlety in there.
That's right, yeah.
Handles.
Yeah. They are very adamant about their passions and have been loading the interwebs with informative and funny videos for a while now. Also, question. It says he's been watching Portlandia recently and says, do young people really go to Portland to retire? And I said, if you call moving here without a job and no insurance and then not having any options for work, retirement, then yes. Yes, you do. And then donations. We got...
we have shuffleboard places all over.
That's right. It's amazing.
Cruises leaving daily.
Yeah. And guys in... they dress like retirees, I guess. So.
They dress like they're from the 30s.
Yeah. The dream of irony is alive here. Johnny K in Florida and Blaine from BC both sent us donations. We thank you very much. That helps us keep beer flowing into our systems.
That's
and
right.
It helps keep data flowing over the servers down to you so you can hear the shows. If you do want to help us out, you can donate at thesprocketpodcast.com. We got a button right up there that you can push. So that's pretty much it. We should probably close this whole thing out. We've got upcoming shows. Next week.
You've never done that.
It's
you usually just give up.
It's important. I think people should know. next week on the 5th of February, Amos Hunter from the Bike Temple is going to tell some bike touring stories. On the 12th, Boston bicycle advocates David Watson of the Mass Bike and Pete Stidman of the Boston Cyclist Union. I talked to both of them while I was in Boston. The week after that, Dan Sorger of City Bike Design, also in Boston, and a hilarious guy. And then February 26th, Martina from Clever Cycles. And I'll be out of town, but you'll be here. So
that's true.
Yeah.
Can I do the outro, dude?
You can do the outro.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, the fine print of it all is you can email us at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Find us at Twitter at @sprocketpodcast. Our phone number is 503-847-9774, or visit us on the web at thesprocketpodcast.com. For links, info, and more. Ryan J. Lane, thank you very much for providing our intro and outro music on your independently released 2009 project, Conversations of the Leisured. Find them online at myspace.com/RyanJLane. Thank you to Hurt Bird for some other music. I'm Brandon.
And I am Brock. This has been Katie. And this is the end.
Woo! Adios.
See you later. Next time. Well, in that case, okay.
Eh.
People are going to have to deal. That's what they're going to have to do. All right.